the College Football Fix Podcast. With Paul Meyerberg and Dan Wolkin. This is the College Football Fix Podcast from USA Today Sports.
Welcome back to the College Football Fix Podcast. I'm Dan Wolkin with USA Today Sports. Paul Meyerberg is here as well. And we are in the real week one, the actual week one. I don't even want to call whatever that was in week zero, week one. Let's just kind of pretend that that was, I don't even know what you'd call it, like preseason or something. That did not feel like, it didn't have the intensity of regular season college football. But maybe that's just because Notre Dame was so much better than Navy. And that's really the only game that seemed like a serious football game that told us a lot about one of these teams.
You clearly didn't watch UMass and New Mexico State then.
I did not.
That didn't people say that had a playoff feel about games. That had a Super Bowl feel to me, that game. It felt like the world was at stake in the fourth quarter of that game. UMass, as everybody knows, especially you, Dan, was picked number 133 in our re-rank.
And I'm sorry, who ended up winning? Who won?
UMass won.
Okay,
UMass won. 41-30.
Don Brown, baby.
Don Brown. So clearly motivated by the slights and snubs of preseason prognosticators, UMass came out and played their Super Bowl and they won. So that to me was the only game of the day, like you said, that had a intense feel. Ohio, San Diego State also was a physical game, kind of ugly. Yeah, I'm with you. That was week 0.5.
It was not week zero, W-E-E-K. It was week, W-E-A-K,
nice.
Zero.
I had a feeling you were going that direction. That's a good one.
No shade to any of the teams that played. Congratulations on your win, Matt, UMass. Jacksonville State beating UTEP. First game in Conference USA. Nice for them. But, hey, Notre Dame looked awesome, didn't they?
I thought so, too. I mean, it's hard to, like, I kept thinking back to last year, like, Northwestern won that game, and they haven't won a game since. So, like, who knows you take out of Dublin. But, like, there's a lot of, that's not an easy place to play. Not the stadium itself, but, like, you got to travel. You're doing all this junk beforehand. It's like a bowl game. You've got all these appearances and dinners and the banquets and stuff. So to be fired up and to come out fired up and to put Navy in a hole early, yeah, I just think that's a really good look for Notre Dame. And clearly Sam Hartman, 5 incompletions, 4 touchdowns, down the field was outstanding at 10 yards plus. So there was a lot to like, Dan, a lot to like from Notre Dame.
Yeah, I'm not going to make any grand conclusions about what we saw because the reality is Notre Dame is just bigger, more physical, faster, just more of everything than Navy. This is not, I don't think, one of those Navy teams that we're going to look back on and be like, man, they were tough. And there's a whole other discussion to be had about, you know, the option and service academy football right now in the portal era where the service academies really can't work the portal. There's also the cut blocking rules that have changed that the triple option teams, I just think, are kind of up against it. It's going to be tough for Brian Newberry. You know, there's a reason. You could say there's a reason Navy fired the coach last year, or you could say this shows why you shouldn't fire the coach. But they were pretty bad. So I'm not going to watch that game and come away saying, oh, yeah, Notre Dame's going 12-0. They're going to win the national championship. Because I just don't think they got a good test, frankly, from Navy. But I do think it's meaningful that Sam Hartman, who we talked about, hey, was he just sort of a system guy at Wake Forest, or was he the real deal whose skill set could translate changing teams? And at least for week one, as efficient as he was, as good as he was, I think it's fair to say he's gonna have a real nice year.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet. And yeah, you don't want to overvalue this win. I just think we can take a lot of positives out of it. And I just, you know, this season comes down to 3 games for Notre Dame: Ohio State, SC, Clemson. That's it. I mean, and I would just say, Navy being Navy, the game's in a neutral site. There's a lot of other rigmarole going on, but the team that I saw on Saturday pretty clearly should win every other game on its schedule except for those three. Unlike last season.
I think we've come a long way in the Notre Dame discourse from a year ago when they were losing at home to Marshall and everyone's like, is this Marcus Freeman guy for real? Can he coach? Was this a big mistake? That looked like a really well organized football team.
Yeah, and this is what good teams do to mediocre or worse teams. So, like we said, we can continue to wait until Ohio State to anoint Notre Dame as a championship team or championship caliber team, but you cannot come out of that game on Saturday with anything but positive vibes. So, what about SC? I mean, not that anyone could watch it, but any thoughts?
So that was the other end of the spectrum here. I couldn't watch it. I was not in a position to be anywhere near the Pac-12 network on Saturday. I don't even know if the Pac-12 network exists at this point. I know at one moment in time on my cable system, I could watch the Pac-12 network in standard definition, not even in HD.
Yeah.
I actually think that is no longer available or something. I'm not sure. Either way, I wasn't even at home. So, they won 56-28 over San Jose State, but the people who watched the game, and certainly you could look at the way the game flowed in the box score and say that maybe there wasn't a whole lot different defensively than what we've come to expect. It was 21-14 at halftime. USC had the lead. They scored on the first two possessions of the second half. It was 35-14. And then it was just sort of this slop fest, and it ends up 56-28. Alex Grinch's defense was certainly not impressive to the likes of Bill Plaschke. He wrote a column in the LA Times kind of criticizing that performance. They gave up almost 400 yards. It's the same conversation over and over again. I don't know what more to say other than show me you're better.
Yeah, they didn't show that as far as we know on Saturday. Giving up about 7 point something yards per play against San Jose State, it doesn't make me feel good inside if I'm SC. It just doesn't. I will say the offense clearly is going to be really good. I kind of wrote this on Saturday night, during the game, not that I was able to watch it, but I was able to see a screen grab of Cliff Kingsbury on the sideline, with his little sheet, just chit-chatting on the sideline. And then it really, really made the idea take hold that this offense is going to be filthy. I mean, you've got Cliff Kingsbury, kind of helping out for your offense. Things are going to probably go pretty well. So 56-28 just feels like what we're going to expect from SC, just like last year. This is not a championship team if you're going to give up 400 yards and 28 points to San Jose State, which is okay. They're going to just outscore a whole bunch of teams. And it'll be fun to watch, but they're going to be frustrating and confusing.
By the way, my alma mater, Vanderbilt, got a win, 35-28 over Hawaii. Probably a pretty good performance from Hawaii's standpoint, given that Vanderbilt kind of crushed them last year. And obviously Hawaii's had a lot of other things going on back home. If there's one thing to take away from a Vanderbilt perspective, I thought A.J. Swan, the quarterback, looked pretty good. I thought he was fairly impressive. 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Mm-hmm. So maybe Vanderbilt's got something there. But I would say if you're Vanderbilt and you're trying to make a case for significant improvement this year in the SEC, eking out a 7-point win over Hawaii. I know it was the spread was wider than that and it got a little close late, but I'm not sure that's exactly confidence inspiring.
Yeah, I don't really know if I'd come out of that thinking that Vanderbilt's going to be very good. But they still won. They won. And also I thought you were like, it's the season opener, it gets delayed by weather, you're going to be off and you're going to have some rhythm problems. So whatever. Sure. I mean, who cares? And look, like you said, they have a young quarterback who can sling it, And that's great. Unfortunately, they averaged 1.5 yards per carry against Hawaii. And they got outgained by 100 yards. They had a short field touchdown, and they had a special teams touchdown. So, also, they were -2 in turnover margin. not a lot to like except for the win. But when you're Vanderbilt, right? Like, it's not, we're not going to be really picky. This is a win and we're going to move forward.
Okay. So let's get into some realignment news before we move on to what's happening this week. As at the time of this podcast being recorded, the ACC had not done anything officially, but there's clear momentum toward adding Cal, Stanford, and SMU to the ACC. All right, I'm probably going to offend some people and probably make a few people mad. I think this is a damn joke. I think this whole thing is a joke. I think it represents the worst of what college athletics is about right now. And look, I am rooting for Stanford and Cal to have relevant athletic departments and good programs. And it is incredibly awful what their fellow Pac-12 members did to them by scattering to other leagues and leaving them behind. And I understand that if you're Cal and Stanford, you're extremely desperate to get into a so-called power conference and have a place to play, and the clock is ticking and all of that, right? So I understand they will do whatever they need to do, go to whatever lengths they need to get into a league. And obviously the Big Ten doesn't want them. The Big 12 doesn't really want them. But if you're the ACC, have some self-respect. And it's not associating with Cal and Stanford. Those are great schools, right? If you're the president of Wake Forest and Boston College or whatever, you're, I'm sure, loving the idea that you're getting two of the best academic universities in the country. Mm-hmm. But the way they're doing it is awful. What they're doing is they're adding these teams, which kicks in certain provisions in their ESPN contract to make them more money, not pro rata. In other words, the amount of money that those three are bringing in does not equal what a normal ACC share is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. It's much, much less than that. It's like, I don't know, it's like half, right? And they're going to take that money in the ACC and essentially divvy it up amongst themselves and go among the existing members and try to devise a way to have some performance bonuses that will essentially try to make Florida State shut up for a couple years. Like, that's what this is. And in order to do that, I don't know, like, Cal and Stanford are probably going to be making, they're essentially going to be making American Athletic Conference money to play in the pack and to play in the ACC. And SMU, which is in the AAC, is going to take zero for like many years, for several years. Like, we're going to have two presidential elections by the time SMU collects a paycheck from the ACC. And they're going to just underwrite the costs with their boosters or whatever. They're essentially, this is pay to play. They're paying to play in the ACC. And the ACC is like, yeah, we'll do that because it's going to make us a few extra million. And you know, maybe it'll satisfy Florida State for a little while. I think it's disgusting. I think it's a disaster. I think it's a sign that the ACC is incredibly, incredibly weak and probably headed toward extinction.
Why couldn't Stanford and Cal, is it just because of the timeline that they can't be like, let's do our water polo, swimming, soccer, volleyball program a solid and have them play in the West Coast Conference and just do football and basketball in the ACC? Is that even an option, Dan? Is there just not enough runway at this time to put that together? And if there is enough time, why not just do that? Like the UNC soccer coach said, let them die on the vine, because it's not good for ACC non-mainstream sports to add Cal, Stanford, and SMU. It's just not.
Yeah, I think those would be pretty complicated conversations, especially when you think about, all right, you're the WCC. You know, Cal and Stanford want to bring in various sports programs that are probably, from a budget standpoint, way beyond the programs you already have.
Oh, like an unfair balance kind of thing.
You know what I mean? And like, so if you're the WCC or a league like that, what are you really getting out of it if you're not including basketball? You know, if you're only including the sports that don't make any money, that doesn't help. That doesn't really help the WCC or one of those leagues in any way. So I just think those are really complicated conversations. You know, I just don't think it works. At least in the current state of play.
Let's just focus on football because that's all I care about anyway. Is the appeal of Stanford and Cal enough from an academic, well-rounded perspective that kids are going to want to play there? Like, is it enough just to go to Stanford, even if it means that your family is only going to see you play one local road game and the rest of the year they're going to have to fly out to Clemson?
I don't know. I mean,
like, that's San Francisco to like El Paso to Atlanta. Like, have a great day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's not true. You go San Francisco. What am I talking about? But still, that's just
it's tough. It's tough.
It's too much.
I actually sort of wonder, and this is a conversation for another time, probably. But you know, football is going to football. I'm interested in like basketball and some of these other sports. Will there be a recruiting impact? You know, Stanford in a lot of sports, Stanford was recruiting the best in the country because they win a lot. They win a lot mm-hmm. of national championships in, you know, swimming. You know, go on down the line. They're really, really good. But are the kind of kids they were getting going to still want to do that, knowing all the travel and knowing it's going to be a lot more missed class? And it's an interesting concept. I don't really think this helps the ACC at all. What it helps maybe is a survival situation. If Florida State, Clemson, and whoever else end up leaving, the ACC will still have enough to have a league, but it's just.
Yeah, but then like.
But what kind of league is it?
Yeah, then you're right back in the same situation. And you're just right back in the same situation. So it seems short-sighted maybe on both sides. But, like, I see from Stanford's perspective, best of all, like, Stanford is an elite athletic department. Not just elite, like, by the measurements that, like, the inside baseball measurements that ADs use and athletic departments use, it's the number one athletics department in the entire country.
Well, guess what? SMU is not any of those things. SMU is going to get their ass kicked. And, I mean, do you want to talk about a program that's just not ready for prime time in any way, shape, or form? And they're going to be going into the ACC next year. As somebody in the American joked with me the other day, when they write the exit fee check, that will be the biggest contribution SMU has made to the American Athletic Conference. All right, let's move on to some other stories. Jim Harbaugh slamming the NCAA at his press conference. Of course, Harbaugh probably was incentivized to make headlines because he's going to be suspended, as we talked about, for the first three games of the season, and probably wanted to change the conversation a little bit. But basically, he came out strongly in saying, we need to revenue share with the athletes. And he's probably the most prominent coach who said it that explicitly. Anything to take from that? I mean, look, you and I think are both on the same page here, and we know where this should be heading. But fairly interesting and strong for somebody of Harbaugh's stature to basically just say, we need to pay the players.
Yeah,
That's not something you hear every day. But in some ways, it's kind of funny just how the environment's changed. Like, it was a story that he said that, but it wasn't like leading ABC Nightly News like it might have been 10 years ago.
Yeah, that was exactly my thought yesterday. And I didn't even think 10 years. I was like, maybe pre-COVID, like as early as 2018 that you had this conversation, it would have been huge news. Like you said, it might even have been national. It would have been national sports news, certainly, to have a coach like Jim Harbaugh at the University of Michigan come out and make that statement. But today, it's a novelty, but yeah, we're not like, oh my God, I can't believe Jim Harbaugh said that. It's just interesting. I don't want to be too cynical. There may be an aspect that he's like, hey, this is my chance before the season starts just to maybe change the dialogue a bit. Maybe there's an aspect of it, but in his defense, like, he's never said anything this strong, but he has been the one coach for years, maybe 2 or 3 years, maybe even more, who has raised this topic of conversation more than a few times. So I give him a little bit of credit that he's been on the vanguard of this.
Let's move on to Nick Saban.
I'm talking Nick Saban today, by the way, Dan.
You are?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's on behalf, like, this is, it's on behalf of Aflac.
Sure, fine.
You know, I want to ask, this is a question I have for him. I have 20 minutes. I figure this will take up 19 and a half. Is there a duck on set? Or is there a person, with the dots on their face, like Thanos in Avengers, the actor who played Thanos, like acting out the duck? I want to know. Is he a method actor? Does he tap into his past?
I'm not sure he's going to want to give you his secrets. He's certainly not going to tell you who his starting quarterback's going to be.
I ain't going to tell you, so quit asking. I want to get him to tell me that. Let's talk about Nick Saban. I am excited to speak with him. It's actually going to be an Aflac related call, but nonetheless, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, if you can get Nick Saban talking on the right topics, he's tremendous to talk to. He will give you all kinds of things to think about.
Yes.
But what insurance
is that topic.
Yeah, true. what he's not going to do, clearly, when he's not ready to name a starting quarterback, or maybe because his quarterbacks stink, it's hard to tell, but he's not going to name a starting quarterback. He went to his press conference and did not release a depth chart for the first time in 17 years. And he said of this, quote, "It creates a lot of distractions. And quite frankly, you know, we don't need that. I want all of our players to continue to compete for playing time, to try to play at the highest level. And I don't want anybody on our team to think they're a backup player or whatever."
So what do you make of that? What do you make of that, Sam?
What I make of it is that the quarterbacks suck. That I could be wrong. Like, we've been fooled before. But when Nick Saban doesn't do something that he's done every week for 17 years, and like he's just changing it at this stage of the game after how many national championships, and you know, I don't think Nick Saban's been the type who's shied away from tough personnel decisions. And look, there have been times. Do you remember when it was like the Jake Coker? Who did they start against Ole Miss? I can't even remember the name of the guy they started against Ole Miss, and it was a disaster. And they lost, and they had to change. I'll look it up.
I don't remember. Yeah, but no, this is not the first time he's had a quarterback quandary. It's just the first time that we are 4 days out from the season opener and don't really have an idea of what's going on. But, Dan, like you said, he's won six, right? You know, he's won so much over this span, like he said, it's been 17 years and he hasn't done this. Part of me just wants to be like, they're going to go 15-0. I don't know why that is. I just don't know why that is, but I don't know. When he does something different like this, I just assume that it's going to work. It's just going to work. You know what I mean? And they're going to come out and whatever, whoever's that quarterback, his son is going to regain eligibility and play quarterback and throw for 500 yards. The benefit of the doubt extends very, very, very far. But it is weird. It is weird. I admit that.
And I believe the quarterback I was referencing was Cooper Bateman. As our editor Eric chimed in. Yeah, remember he earned his first career start against Ole Miss, and it was 2015, and it was just
the Bo Wallace game.
Yeah.
It
was just a disaster. So there's been indecision at times before on the quarterback thing, but I don't know. Just to me, it smells of we don't know what we're going to do. Like it's not to try to fool Middle Tennessee. I mean, it's Middle Tennessee, right? You're not losing to Middle Tennessee, but there's clearly some other stuff going on, and they haven't quite figured out what to do about this, which I do think is I think is problematic. Like we do tend to overthink and always believe that Nick Saban knows exactly what he's doing and he's got everything completely under control and planned out. I'm not sure that's true. Like sometimes you're just not, you know, you're just not quite where you need to be. And that's to me what this indicates, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, you could be, but you could be right.
Okay, let's jump into the games this weekend. It is always fascinating in week one. You end up getting some really good matchups, and then you end up getting some duds. I feel like the Thursday night game we're going to get, Florida at Utah, is going to be one of those that is not a dud. I think it's going to be great. If you remember last year, that was a game that Utah clearly should have won. They were way better than Florida, but they went down to the swamp. It kind of got away from them. Everyone is, you know, hailing Anthony Richardson. He's going to win the Heisman. Billy Napier's the dude. Florida had a pretty bad year. Now, Anthony Richardson's going to be fine. He's a multimillionaire already, and he's going to start. We'll see how his career goes with the Colts.
I wouldn't say he's going to be fine. But he's going to be he is a millionaire. I'm not sure how this year is going to go for him.
We'll see. Yeah. But obviously that game lied to us. And we'll talk about this next week. Just historically, week one always lies to us. But I'm excited about this game. I think this has a potential to be really good. And you know, with Utah, it doesn't seem like Cam Rising is going to play.
Yeah,
probably. I mean, it's too, you know, the injury situation is what it is. Utah's favored. Probably just being at home, altitude, experience, toughness, all that. But, you know, there's a lot of excitement in Florida, too. That I think the people of Florida think they're going to be way better.
Mm-hmm. I could see that. And maybe my optimism around Florida is just based off Napier's track record. It's not extensive, but you do what he achieved in the Sun Belt, you know, year after year, and you make that second year leap. Clearly, you know how to get this ship turned around. I'm still picking Utah in this game. Not that you asked, but I would pick Utah even without Cam Rising for the reasons that you listed. I think having it at home, I think their inherent toughness is obviously an asset in their favor. At the same time, you know, Florida, if they are as improved as people say that they are, as they hope to be, maybe they should win this game. I don't really know where to come down on it. Utah feels like the safer pick for me at this point.
All right, Saturday in the noon window, which is probably not altogether amazing. However, we are getting – actually, let me roll back to Friday. There's one game that's worth mentioning Friday. Louisville with Jeff Brohm making his debut, coaching the Cardinals, coming back from Purdue, playing Georgia Tech, who – is not exactly making their debut under Brent Key, but Brent Key was the interim at the end of last season. Georgia Tech played pretty well. He ended up getting the job as the full-time head coach. They're actually doing some pretty good stuff in recruiting at Georgia Tech. I think there's some positive stuff there. Louisville's favored by 7.5. I kind of have a feeling like Georgia Tech might have something for him.
Yeah, I could see that. Like you said, this isn't his first game, and you have to appreciate the work that Key did down the stretch last season on a program that seemed a little bit in disarray. So this is not like rookie coach versus rookie coach. If anything, I think the pressure is on Louisville to get started on a hot on a good foot under Brohm. I love that fit. Everyone does. I think down the road, this could be such an intriguing, not ACC front runner program, but like they could take the spot that NC State has taken, which is like team number 4 in the ACC on a regular basis. I do think Louisville has that potential, but yeah, I'm until we see what they're about, I almost want to pick Georgia Tech. Like for the reasons you said, they seem a little bit more consistent and a little bit more aware of what they are and who they want to be. So yeah, it's an interesting game. I thought you were going to say Miami at Miami.
No. Well,
for the battle. Miami of Ohio
at Miami, Florida. Yeah, fun, I guess. I don't think it'll be much of a game.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Miami's going to win for sure.
Miami will definitely win.
Friday's not that great. And Thursday's okay, like you said. I mean, you're not going to complain, but week one is never as good as week two. Like, remember week one used to be the week?
Yeah.
Now it's like week two is the week of September.
One thing I did want to mention real quick, we forgot to talk about in the open. Arizona State imposed a bowl ban for this year for Herm Edwards stuff. We don't really need to talk about this because I don't really understand what Arizona State's doing or what the rationale was. The NCAA doesn't really seem to be giving out bowl bans anymore. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I don't think it's a huge deal over the long haul for Kenny Dillingham, but it just does underline what a disaster the Herm Edwards hire was. I mean, not only was he bad as a coach, not only did you have to fire him and pay him a whole lot of money, but you're also getting a bowl ban this year that he doesn't have to serve after you fired him and that you've put on the new coach. That's pretty freaking shameful.
Yeah, good for Dillingham is that he gets an automatic year extension. So, yes, like, that's good for you. But, look, I don't think they're going to a bowl game this year anyway. So they were going to penalize themselves as is.
All right, Saturday noon, TCU hosting Colorado, Deion Sanders. I mean, that's the game everybody's going to be watching. That's probably the game we will be talking about next week, for better or worse, because I don't know what to expect from Colorado. I don't think anybody does. TCU's a 3-touchdown favorite. They're obviously in a much better place as a program. Don't know how good their team's going to be. As we've talked about in the preseason thing, they're probably not going to be as good as last year. They're certainly not going to be as good as last year. I'm excited to just see. Like, it's one of those I have no expectations for what Colorado's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea who is going to show up. All I know is from the very limited videos that I've watched of this team, like, they just seem like they're not that big. You know what I mean? They might be fast. They might have some team speed. I actually have no doubt that they do. I'm sure Deion has recruited a significant amount of speed. They just look really small. So until we know what kind of line play they're going to get, like on both sides, I don't have any idea what to expect. I mean, my expectation is that they go like 2-10 or 3-9, because that's where the program has been the last few years. But maybe there's a surprise in there, you know? And this is a good time to get this TCU team. I think TCU will get better as the year goes on. So, yeah, like you said, they're 20.5-point underdogs. I would pick TCU to cover that, because I don't know what Colorado is going to be like. But, you know, it is the most fascinating experiment in recent FBS history. So, yeah, everyone will be watching.
The afternoon window, honestly, is quite weak. I will be interested in Boise State at Washington. Mm-hmm. Washington is a 2-touchdown favorite. Boise certainly turned things around last year toward the end. I thought they looked a little bit better. I was about ready to give up on Andy Avalos.
Oof.
I really
see that. I mean, the first year wasn't very good. Yeah, they are like a top five group of five team at the very least. But Washington is a tough place to play. Everyone knows that for decades. Yep. And Washington, they're going to score a heck of a lot of points. I don't know
Michael
if Boise
Penix.
Can keep. Yeah, I don't know if they can keep pace just from a scoring perspective. But a good early test for Washington, and like we should say this while we can, a potential barometer game for the Pac-12.
Much more interesting in the nighttime window Saturday, West Virginia at Penn State. I honestly don't think this is going to be a very close game. But, you know, West Virginia, this is like a crucial year for Neil Brown. He's probably going to get fired if they're not good. There are 3-touchdown underdogs. It would certainly help Neil Brown going into the more important games of West Virginia season if they don't get embarrassed.
I think they could get embarrassed, Dan. I really think they could get embarrassed. Yeah. I think Penn State is going to be like gangbusters. I think they're going to come out red hot.
I think you're right. Yeah. North Carolina, South Carolina, the Duke's Mayo Classic. Let's hope there's no mayonnaise being inflicted upon anybody, because that's a vile substance.
Disgusting.
North Carolina's favored 2.5. Obviously, they're going to have a good offense, and you know we know how good Drake May is. But at this point, if there's a program that does not deserve the benefit of the doubt on anything, it's North Carolina.
Right.
And if there's a program that does deserve the benefit of the doubt, it's South Carolina, because they are consistently exceeding what people's expectations are of them. So I just sort of naturally go into this game expecting South Carolina to win.
Yeah, South Carolina, like, gets no respect. And in this kind of crossover game, I don't know why South Carolina is not being picked just to win this outright. North Carolina has not been, they had a really nice hot streak, obviously, to start last season or in the midst of last season, tailed off in a big way. They have not at all capitalized on the hype machine that went into overdrive after what? The COVID year, is that when we were all on board heading into 21, I think?
Yeah.
And look, they have Drake May, but, and I understand that, like, he's one heck of a player, but it's not like Spencer Rattler is a bag of trash. I think South Carolina is a dang good football team. So I'm picking them to win this game. I don't know if we've done our – I haven't sent my picks in, but when we do our picks, I think South Carolina is going to win this game. I like
I agree.
This matchup.
And then on Sunday, I know the big one we're all looking forward to is Northwestern Rutgers. No, it's not.
Yeah, of course.
That's a CBS game, by the way. National CBS.
Ugh.
That's a tough scene, man.
That's got to be bad, bad, bad.
I would highly recommend watch the U.S. Open instead of Northwestern Rutgers. Sunday night, LSU Florida State in Orlando. It was a bit of a crazy game last year. Florida State had it and then almost choked and then was able to eke it out at the end. Big expectations for both teams, and it's a very important game for the winner. I don't think the loser necessarily is eliminated from anything important, but obviously you never want to lose the opener. Kudos to both schools for getting this matchup, for having good teams. That makes it really exciting. LSU's a 2.5-point favorite, but I'm going with the Noles.
Ooh, good one.
Because
okay.
I think Mike Norvell's got something up his sleeve this year.
Nice. Okay, that's cool. I like that. Yeah, I don't know where I'm going to pick on it. But I will say I know you're right. I know you're right that the loser is not out of this thing. I know you're right. But this is the one game of the week that feels really intense for good reason. This is, what, 6-7 in our poll. I don't remember off the top of my head. But this is the game that feels high stakes. It feels important. It feels like the loser is just done, marooned in the middle of the ocean with no help, and the winner is going to win the Super Bowl. It just feels that way to me. So this is the game of the week. If you're going to watch, obviously, one game, please make it this one. And it's also on a Sunday night, and you've got nothing else going on Labor Day Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, look, Norvell to me is just – I think he might be one of the three best offensive coaches in college football. And when he's got a returning quarterback with a lot of experience like you have with Jordan Travis, I just think there's magic there. I think they're going to be really good offensively. LSU is going to be compromised in this game without Mason Smith, defensive lineman who was suspended for – you know, an autograph thing right before NIL was legalized. Look, I don't want to get into the argument about whether the punishment is correct or not. It was a rule. He broke the rule. Yes, it's not a rule now. It was a rule then. You know, my opinion on the NCAA is very, very clear. I think that does impact how potentially LSU is going to play.
Yeah, it's a big loss. It's a big loss. Like, there's no going over that. And you don't want to simplify things too much, but clearly best based off the way Florida State has evolved as an offense, if your interior line or your front seven can bottle up their running game and specifically keep Travis out of a game-breaking zone in the running game, you're going to beat Florida State. I mean, that's what we've seen. So I think that's going to have an impact, no doubt about it. Florida State wins this game. I think the bandwagon is going to – I mean, the bandwagon's almost full already. But if they win this game, it's going to be off the charts. And I think the Tallahassee is going to go just absolutely crazy for this team. So it'll be a lot of fun. Let's note that it is in Orlando.
Yep.
So it's a neutral site game. I don't think that favors either team, given the way LSU travels. So just a huge game. Just a huge game, a ramifications game. We're going to be talking about this game all year long.
That's a great call. Ramifications game. One that also could have some ramifications, the last game we'll talk about, is Monday, Labor Day evening, Clemson at Duke. Clemson's a 13-point favorite. I saw Dabo belly aching about the long 3-minute walk from the field to the visitor's locker room at Duke. Oh, my God.
He runs it. He'll run it in like 22 seconds. I've seen him sprint. Oh, he's got to be going downhill. They've reached max speed. So.
And he's also getting older, you know. I don't know. I mean, people think Duke's going to be pretty good, and Mike Elko's a hell of a coach. We know that. And I guess there's some potential upset stuff in the air on this one, but I'm sorry. I'm not going to pick friggin' Duke to beat Clemson.
Yeah.
Come on.
Let's get real. I think that there's an element of surprise that is in Clemson's favor that is pretty profound. Look, like, you can watch all the film you want of TCU, and look, Elko, like, knows that scheme pretty well, at least variations of it. It's not like he's never seen a type of it before, but you've never seen it with Clemson's personnel, and I think you don't know how they're going to use those guys. They don't know how they're going to, like, for example, is Clemson going to – are 40% of Clemson's passes going to be behind the line of scrimmage like TCU? Like, I don't know. I think there's a lot of intrigue around that and a lot of unpredictability. So I give Clemson the edge in that regard. So, yeah, I don't – no disrespect to Duke, but how could you pick Duke to win this game? Just if you're not just being a contrarian, cynical jackass.
You can't, and we won't. And with that, we will wrap up this version of the College Football Fix podcast for week one. We'll be back next week to break down everything we saw, preview week two, go over all the news and notes in the sport as we do every week at this time. So for Chandler, our producer, Eric Smith, our college sports editor who's listening in, and Paul Meyerberg, I'm Dan Wolkin from USA Today Sports. We'll see you next time on the College Football Fix.
The College Football Fix podcast. With Paul Meyerberg and Dan Wolkin. This is the College Football Fix podcast from USA Today Sports.